This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Junior Thomas joins us, SB Nation, on the AFC and NFC Championship games. And a look, a two-week of hype for Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta, Patriots and Rams. How are you, Gina?
Doing great, thanks. How are you?
Good. Let's get to the non-call, the pass interference in the Saints-Rams game. As far as looks for the NFL, look, is they're pretty much rolling along here, but the reality of it is this a bad look for the league, that call?
It's not a great look for the league. I think that it's certainly justified to be frustrated by that missed call. But I also think that you have to look at it in a larger context. There are blown calls in every single game. But referees do have a difficult job, you know, making those judgment calls in real time. And that's not the reason that the Saints lost. There's very rarely a singular reason that a team loses a game. You know, there are multiple things that added up to that. So I do think that it's not a great look for the league. But I also think that it may be blown just a little bit out of proportion.
Yeah, and I pointed it out. I think that the problem that we have as fans sometimes is we assume so much, right? If you miss a kick at the end of a tie game, or you're trailing by two and you miss a kick, you can say, well, missing that kick cost us that game, but you can also point out too many mistakes. We would be assuming that the Saints don't turn over the ball, that the hold would have been accurate, that a kick would have gotten off, that there would have been no time for the Rams came back. There's so much assumption behind it. In terms of, though, the mistakes, were you surprised that the Saints, in that situation, were throwing the ball that late?
I was. I mean, that was really one of the bigger surprises of the game, I felt like. It was a questionable game management decision from Sean Payton. I don't know why, especially with Alvin Kamara in the backfield, you're not running the ball in that situation. So, yes, I definitely was surprised by that.
Give me an idea from the Rams. They're down 13-0 on the road. That's a very, very tough situation to be in, especially at the Superdome. Did you notice something about the Rams, the way they adjusted to get back into that game? It's not a huge mountain to overcome to be down two scores, but it's certainly enough in a loud place. How did they change the way they did things to get back into it?
You know, it looked early on like the noise in the Superdome was getting to Jared Goff. He is a younger quarterback, you know, a little bit less experienced, and I think that playoff atmosphere in New Orleans is very intense. So I think that what happened more than anything was that he just kind of settled in. He looked more confident as the game progressed. I think that he got more accustomed to the silent count and adapted to not really being able to hear the play calls as they came in, and yeah, so I think that it was just him settling in as much as anything else.
When you look at the Saints, and listen, we see teams that are played really well, everything worked for them, and you say, oh, they'll be here next year, but we don't see them here next year. Is there still enough there, even with Drew Brees at 40, is there enough there to believe, okay, this is going to be a pretty good run for this collection of Saints?
There is. You know, they do have a lot of talent. I think they've done a really nice job of building that defense. And Brees still played at a very high level this year, despite his age. So I think that he will still be able to function effectively next year. That being said, this was just kind of a lightning in the bottle year for the Saints. They had the same record as they had in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl. They have lost to the same teams in 2018 as they did in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl, and then, of course, took the NFC Championship game to overtime, just like they did in 2009. So they look like a team of destiny. And I think that, you know, that part of it, that lightning in the bottle aspect, is what they're going to have a hard time recreating next year.
Gina Thomas joins us, SB Nation, to talk about the AFC and NFC Championship games. All right, the New England Patriots defense held the Chiefs, the high-scoring Chiefs, to 7 points through three quarters. Yep, the game got more interesting in the fourth. But for three quarters of football, the Chiefs were held to 7 points. How did they do that?
I honestly don't even know. it was pretty unexpected, just especially after watching the Chiefs all season. They've been spectacular. So I honestly don't know what they did differently. I just was amazed that they were able to do it.
In terms of what the Patriots have done, I mean, this shouldn't have been any surprise given, but you know, they rode the underdog angle, but we've been kind of amazed at this, and we're getting used to the Patriots going back to Super Bowls, But yet it feels like every year I should be like, I shouldn't be amazed at this. This is the Patriots blueprint all along. They can come back in games. Nothing is big. They'll go anywhere and play their game and beat you. What does that say about who the Patriots are that we still are like, wow, they did it again?
Well, you know, I think that Falcon fans, and certainly I, know better than anybody else how dangerous the Patriots are in the postseason. Bill Belichick is just a master strategist when it comes to the game, and I think that that is probably what sets them apart more than anything. And also, Tom Brady being the kind of player that he is, you know, really the greatest quarterback of this era. And so you just can't count those guys out. It doesn't matter what's going on. I think that it really is Belichick's ability to keep sort of an emotional distance from the game and maintain that strategy and adapt it throughout the game to make sure that they pull it off. I think that that's the biggest thing.
We are an overreacting fan base. We go a little nuts sometimes, but the cry of let's change overtime, let's give both teams the ball no matter what, is that on the table? Is that a legit argument?
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't happy with the overtime rules after Super Bowl 51, but they are what they are. I don't know if the team is going to be willing to make any changes there.
In terms of the Super Bowl in Atlanta, it has had the Super Bowl a few times, but Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a nice place. What those who are going or those who will experience it, what does the city of Atlanta, how great is this going to be for the city? What is the city, how does it embrace the Super Bowl?
The city is doing a lot of fun things for the Super Bowl. There are a lot of fan-centric activities. They've got all of that stuff available online. But, yeah, I think that it's going to be a lot of fun. Atlanta's a great city. I'm hoping that we have slightly warmer weather. It's very, very cold here right now. But hopefully it'll ease up a little bit for when everybody's here in a couple of weeks. And, it should be a lot of fun. We're very excited about it, especially since, from Falcons fans' perspective, the Saints are not going to be there.
I can only imagine.
Everybody's a little bit happier.
But you get the Patriots who like to throw that 28-3 thing down everybody's throat, right? I
mean, yeah, but the thing is, every fan base throws the 28-3 thing down Falcons fans' throats, and at least Patriots fans were on the right side of that. It was actually their team. It's a little bit different from when a Saints fan reminds you of 20.
Very true. Good point. As far as a matchup for the league, I love this. I mean, this is old versus new. Belichick, McVay, Goff, Brady. There's so many cool angles to this Super Bowl. What do you think is the prevailing angle to this game? What is the top storyline going in?
You know, I think that probably the top one has to be the Patriots again. I think that everybody but Patriots fans is very tired of this rerun. We would have all loved to see somebody else in there this year. The Chiefs would have been a lot of fun. They were a delightful team to watch all year. So I think that that's one. And then, you know, of course, shifting the focus to if Tom Brady wins another ring, will he finally decide to hang it up? And what does that mean for Belichick's future in New England? Yeah. So I think that that's a narrative that we're going to hear a lot about this offseason. And we'll probably hear quite a bit about, you know, the young guns on the other side of the ball, McVay, or on the other side of the field, McVay and Jared Goff, and, you know, just how talented that team is and how hard they had to work to get there. And so, yeah, I think that it's going to be, we should have some interesting storylines. At least with the Rams coming in, we'll have some different ones than we've all heard over the past several years.
Gina Thomas, SB Nation, AFC and NFC Championship Talk, Super Bowl 53 in her hometown of Atlanta. Appreciate it, Gina, as always. Hope to catch up with you soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You got it. Have they released any food items for the stadium that are Atlanta-specific, Atlanta cuisine? I don't think they have yet. I don't even know what Atlanta cuisine is. Like, if you had the Super Bowl in New Orleans, you'd have, you know, could have put some gumbo, po' boy sandwiches up there, right? Cool New Orleans stuff. Like a little seafood if it was in, I don't know, some other coastal town. I don't like barbecue in Houston, that kind of thing. But I don't know in Atlanta what is distinctly Atlanta for the Super Bowl fair at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I don't know. It should be good. I hope the weather is warmer. I agree with her. It's one thing that, obviously, when you have a Super Bowl indoors, it's pretty cool. But when you have a Super Bowl in cold weather cities in July and January and February, like Indianapolis, Minnesota, yeah, it's dome, but still outdoor stuff. You got to put people in. It's a whole celebration. You know, everybody's kind of hanging around, you know, chilling out. I like it when it's in Miami, like when the Super Bowl's in Miami and they show the beaches and people on the beaches and you're stuck in some cold weather town looking at the Super Bowl life and you're like, oh my God, it's 82 degrees down there and it's 5 degrees below zero. I'm shoveling snow. Saturday, where I live in Nashville, Saturday was near, it was in the 60s on Saturday, and then it plummeted into the 20s. You know what happens when people in from the South have weather that plummets like that sometimes? They go crazy, right? They go, oh, I'm not going to drive. I'm not going to, that's freezing temperatures.
That and they get sick.
They get sick, right? You can't go from 60 degrees and no jacket to 20-something degrees and needing, like, winter gear.
And the problem is, none of us have winter gear.
None of you? No. Why would you have winter gear, right? That's nuts. Yeah,
then we just throw on layers. I'd like, you know, get like 5 sweatshirts on and look like that one kid in Christmas Story can't put his arms down.
That's right. I got a couple of responses already. I put this question about Brady and his job compared to other athletes at their job. I got a number of responses already, including Edwin Moses, the hurdler, right? Edwin Moses was a hurdler. See, yeah. If I have to think about that, it's going to be problematic for me.
Yep.
Nope. I'm not going to be able to think
about
it.
That doesn't count.
What about Pele or Mario Lemieux? Listen, I'm not going down the Mario Lemieux rabbit hole with you people.
No.
Hey. Are you kidding me? If we're going to go hockey, it's Wayne Gretzky or zero people.
Exactly.
All right? If you don't bring up Mario Lemieux to me. Mario Lemieux is fantastic, but he's not the best. He's not even the best in his own sport. That belongs to Wayne Gretzky by 100 miles. I'm sorry. Don't give me the Mario Lemieux lecture.
I've always felt that way. I can't believe
God, it. People bring him up all the time, and I love him, but God.
I always figured it was just isolated just to Pittsburgh. That Mario fandom was isolated at Pittsburgh. And I said, you know what? I get it. It's the same thing. You brought up Pele, right? I've always assumed, and I will always say this, and I grew up watching soccer. Pele was the greatest soccer player that ever lived.
Yes.
By no means is Maradona. Maradona was a great player, but I can't put Maradona in the same conversation. The only reason why his name keeps coming up because it's Brazil against Argentina.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And they try to keep that rivalry for everything.
Stop with Mario Lemieux. I mean, it happens all the time. It drives me crazy. Yeah. Like, look at the statistics in the NHL.
I'm
going to say it again because people need to realize this about Gretzky. You get a point for a goal, and you get a point for an assist, and then you get your career points, in case you don't know how it works, okay? So you get a goal, point for a goal, point for assist. Wayne Gretzky has more points with his assists then the second guy has total points. That means, and I'm gonna put this in perspective for you. That means if Wayne Gretzky scored 0 goals for his entire career, never once lit the lamp, he'd still be the NHL points leader. That's how insane that is.
The other thing too, like when he finally retired, didn't he have nearly like, it was, I don't know if the numbers are correct, but I know he finished with almost triple digits in records.
Yeah, exactly. Like
exactly. Like every minute little detail of, you know, game style records. And I think he still has over 80 NHL records.
The answer to our question about Brady being the best at his job probably comes down to no because of Gretzky.
Right.
Rather than anybody else. And sorry, I don't mean to get off crazy on the Mario Lemieux stuff, but I've heard this. People say this to me all the time about Mario Lemieux. You know, you don't understand hockey, man. Mario Lemieux. No, he's not. Stop. No, he's not. He's a great player. Fantastic player. Great champion. He is not the best player to have ever laced up. You're insane. You're just creating an argument that doesn't exist.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they played against each other, right?
I think, yeah.
So, we can do an apples-to-apples comparison.
Of course, yes.
As opposed to, you know, we always try to compare, who's better, Jordan or LeBron? It's like, well, different eras. They never really played against each other. And, you know, you can always make an excuse. But these two guys, they played against each other. So we can do an apples-to-apples comparison.
Absolutely. I think Gretzky is the right answer. I mean, again, another one, a friend of mine, Henry Richard, 11 Stanley Cups. Again, don't go championships. That's another rabbit hole. Be careful of that rabbit hole. There's other ways to look at this, other ways to dissect it than just he was on championships. Like when you tell me, 11 Stanley Cups. Okay, how many teams were in the league? 6 at the time? 10, 12, 20, 32? I don't care. Just tell me, like, in context with that question. All right, 800-777-2907, or hit me up on Twitter, @TonyDRadio. Hit Ron up at @RonCulver and Ron with 2 N's on SB Nation AM.